Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Well, I didn't think you had it in you.
I'm your huckleberry.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Why, Johnny Ringo, you look like somebody just walked over your grave.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Fight's not with you, Holiday.
I beg to differ, sir. We started a game we never got to finish. Play for blood, remember?
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
I was just fooling about.
I wasn't.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number two here on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan. Thank you guys for being with us on this Tuesday afternoon.
Weather's turned a little bit, man. No rain in the forecast next 7 days. Let's do this.
Whew, fingers crossed on that one. Big game five tonight. Portland up 3-1, looking to eliminate Russell Westbrook and Paul George, the Oklahoma City Thunder. They beat him pretty handily in game four. Russell Westbrook 1 point in the second half in game four. So joining us now with the latest on Oklahoma City from the Daily Oklahoman, Eric Horn. He's on Twitter at Eric Horn. Okay. Give him a follow there. He joins us on the MVPHomeLoans.com Guild Hotline. Eric, does it feel like the Thunder are done in your opinion?
Yeah, pretty much. Look, their offense is just not working right now. And it starts with basically Russell Westbrook. This is a guy who, you know, kind of lived and died by the jump shot last game. Mm-hmm. They weren't able to get him or anybody else into the paint, really. And, you know, it cost them in the last game. And, you know, there's a chance that Westbrook will come back and play better in this game. He was good in game one of the series here in Portland. So I think that there's an opportunity for him to play well. And if he plays well, he gives the Thunder an opportunity because, look, Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum have outplayed him and Paul George so far. So it seems unfair to put a lot on one guy's shoulders. Some other guys have to make shots too. You know, most of the guys on the team haven't shot well outside of one game in the series, game three. But a lot of it falls on Westbrook's shoulders because he's a guy who's going to be handling the ball and taking a majority of the shots, if not Paul George.
Well, in the NBA, I think the superstars always get, you know, the first credit or the first blame, and that's kind of happened in this series with Westbrook and the way that he's played. How much, I guess, blame do you put on Billy Donovan? It just feels like at times they're not attacking Cantor enough. We know the defensive liability that he can be. Maybe they're not being as aggressive as they need to in trapping and double-teaming Damian Lillard. How do you feel about Billy Donovan and just the way he's coaching this series?
I mean, it's really hard to just coach – it's really hard to coach against Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum making more shots than your guys. I don't even think that the defense on those guys has necessarily been poor. I think the Thunder's offense has been poor. And I think that Billy Donovan could find more ways to get guys better shots, but some of it just comes down to Westbrook, you know, kind of taking the onus of taking the right shots. You know, in game one, you saw the best of him in that regard. He passed up, you know, some opportunities he had to take shots. He attacked Cantor in the pick and roll because Cantor was basically glued to Steven Adams' hip and was staying deep in that drop. But if they play Cantor high, Westbrook can't settle for a jump shot. That's just not his game. So, you know, you as Billy Donovan, as the coach, you can put blame on him, but he's not the one ultimately deciding who's taking the shots. If Westbrook settles for jump shots and falls in love with that jumper, that just derails the Thunder's offense. It's as good as a turnover in some instances because – you know, the Thunder's up seven. Westbrook takes a jump shot with, you know, with Damian Lillard going under Steven Adams' screen. Damian Lillard going under a Steven Adams' screen, and Damian Lillard comes out, hits a three in transition. You know, Terrence Ferguson misses another three. Lillard hits another three in transition, and the game is completely changed. So I don't know how much Billy Donovan can do about that stuff. I mean, they played Cantor off the floor in game two. He and Adams have played basically to a stalemate. You know, could Adams finish better, get to the line more? I suppose, but you know, it really comes down to guys just being better about their offense, whether it's Russell Westbrook or Paul George.
Yeah, Thunder beat writer Eric Horn, our guest for the Oklahoman, also does the Thunder Buddy Pod. You can find him on Twitter at Eric Horn. Okay, the Westbrook thing is interesting to me, Eric, and you've been around it a lot longer, and you're there on a daily basis. Just from watching on my TV that game four, it felt like every time he settled for a jump shot. And he kept missing and he kept missing. It felt like the crowd was almost to a, should we boo at this point? And it's weird because he wants to be there. He committed to the franchise. He signed that big contract. But this series has really kind of exposed him kind of where versus where Dame is right now. What is that like, in your opinion, with the fans and Russell Westbrook and what his game is and what the Thunder have been the last couple of years?
Well, it's really been an all-season thing, not so much this series. Like, Russell hasn't shot the ball well all year. You know, it's one thing to be able to do that in the regular season and get away with it, but over the course of a series, and we talked about this going into the playoffs, you're just going to have that guy, that second guy, that's going to have to be efficient offensively. And Westbrook has operated throughout this entire year, through all the shooting lows. For the most part, he's done a pretty good job with his shot selection. There have been a few games here and there where it's derailed games, but he's really done better in improving in that regard. But it's one of the dangers of Russell Westbrook, in that he's a guy who, you know, in game four, I think he hits five jump shots in the first half, and you're thinking to yourself, while this is good, it's also bad, because this is a guy that it's just not sustainable. He's not a guy that's relied on his jump shot his entire career. And for him to get into that in that game, he's not going to be able to keep up jump shot for jump shot with Damian Lillard. So once you saw that happen, it kind of became a warning sign of what was going to eventually become. And it was up to him and the coaching staff to kind of say, look, just because this shot's open, you got to move the ball to the next player. We got to move and probe to get another shot. That's the challenge that Billy Donovan has, and that's the challenge that, frankly, you know, Scott Brooks had before him. If just because a shot's open doesn't mean it's the best shot. Right. It's one thing for Damian Lillard or C.J. McCollum. It's another thing for Russell Westbrook, and I think the fans sense that, and you know, the fans have sensed that all season.
Yeah. You know, we all three of us, my co-host and I and my producer, we all took Oklahoma City to win this series. I think there's a lot of Blazer fans when they won on the last night of the regular season that weren't quite sure how to feel because it played them into the 3 seed. But then change the opponent from Utah to Oklahoma City. How did you expect this series to go? And are you surprised we're in this spot now with Portland up 3-1?
I picked Portland in 7 because I'd seen this team play since the All-Star break and knew that Paul George wasn't playing at the MVP level he was previously. His level was kind of masking some of the mistakes this team was making, whether it was defensive lapses or mostly the defensive lapses. Paul George was making up for them kind of falling back on defense. But, you know, they went through a 2-month stretch where basically everybody was hitting shots except Westbrook, and that was good. And you saw, you know, they swept Portland in the regular season with some strong performances from George. He averaged 38 points a game in the 4-game set against Portland in the regular season. But I just knew that, and I felt that, you know, the way that they were playing down the stretch, guys not making shots, lack of attention to detail on defense, which, frankly, I think the defense has actually improved in this series, outside of just Dame and CJ just making some unbelievable shots. But I knew the margin of error was slim because their offense had regressed, and you're seeing it here. You know, you're seeing great offensive players take advantage not just of defenses, but they're taking advantage of, you know, the Thunder's poor offense, basically turning them into better offensive players than you could even imagine. You know, Westbrook misses a jump shot, that's as good as a turnover. And Dame and CJ are making them pay for it.
Yes, you know, we've been dealing in Portland here, Eric, with get out of the first round. That's kind of been the goal for the team. And then the Nurkic injury happens, and a lot of people are kind of wondering if that's going to even be possible. But now it seems like they're on that doorstep, and they're going to make it happen. Portland fans are going to be pretty ecstatic. OKC fan, however, third straight year they're out in round one. What does Sam Presti do with this team, if anything?
Well, you got to understand the way the Thunder operates is they're not a very reactionary franchise. People are calling for heads. More people than ever are calling for Sam Presti's head because basically he's the one who's going to hire Billy Donovan. He's the one who, you know, has failed to put competent shooting around Russell Westbrook. And he's the one who basically, if you want to go back as far as, you know, 2012, he's the one who traded James Harden, which kind of started this whole cycle. Now, granted, they still were a game away from the NBA finals, with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, but you know, that was a really big move that kind of, you know, shifted this team into a place that they probably didn't need to be a year early. So I think some questions should be asked of Presti, first and foremost. I frankly don't think that firing Billy Donovan is going to make much of a difference, because that's not going to change whether or not Russell Westbrook hits free throws or jump shots, or whether or not he doesn't take them or doesn't. Mm-hmm. But Donovan seems like the most likely answer. But I will say this. You know, Portland, you know this better than anybody. Portland going through what they went through last year, getting swept and embarrassed in the first round, they didn't panic. They didn't go and fire Terry Stotts, and they didn't, you know, trade Damian Lillard and C.J. McCollum when a lot of people were calling for change. And I think that there's some similar aspects to the way that Neil Olshey does his business and the way that Sam Presti does. So I wouldn't be surprised if they actually, you know, brought back some of the same figures. But Donovan seems like the cheapest and easiest, most logical change that's going to happen in the offseason.
Hmm. Well, looking ahead to tonight, you know, game one was close. Portland blows a 19-point lead. It comes down to the wire. They end up winning game two. They separated a little bit as the game went on and won both games in Portland. Comes down to tonight. Paul George had the quote saying, if anybody's built to come back from down 3-1, we can do it. How do you expect tonight to play out?
You know, I think it'll be better than game four. They have to get back to what they were doing in game one and some of their principles. You know, outside of a bad first quarter, they played a good game in game one. And then Westbrook was really – he played really within himself. He limited his three-point attempts, limited turnovers, got guys open shots. And, look, if Westbrook, Jeremy Grant, and Dennis Schroeder make a shot more each in game one, they win, and this series might be a little bit different. But they played better defense, and they made Damian Lillard and C.J. McCollum, you know, take some tough shots. That's what they got to get back to doing. They've got to defend the three-point line as if their season is on the line. And that's going to be most important to them, because they're not going to outshoot Damian Lillard and C.J. McCollum. So what they need to do is they need to defend the three-point line like their lives depend on it.
10 being the most surprised, get you out here on this one, Eric. Scale of 1 to 10, if the Thunder could come back and win this series, where would you be on that scale?
You said 10 most surprised?
Mm-hmm.
13. I haven't seen them. It's been a really long time since they won three games in a row. Mm-hmm. They struggled to win two games in a row out of the All-Star break. And I really don't mean to sound like a pessimist, but I've seen this team play for too much. And I just understand that what they're up against right now, even if they have an excellent defensive performance, it's going to come down to shot selection. It's going to come down to making the extra pass and executing on offense. And we just haven't seen enough of that post-All-Star break for me to believe that they can win three games in a row.
Yeah, don't worry about being pessimistic on OKC. You're in Portland here, so we're pretty happy to hear everything from you right now. Eric Horn, the Oklahoman Thunder beat writer. Eric, thanks so much. If I see you tonight, I'll say hello, and thank you again for coming on the show. We appreciate it, man.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
There we go. Eric Horn covering the Thunder for the Daily Oklahoman. Over.
Yeah, finished. I mean, his 13 is accurate. They haven't shown enough consistency. I think if the first four games of this series had been maybe slightly more evenly matched, maybe more similar to game one, where they're constantly back and forth, and you could sit here and say, man, OKC's a couple of plays away from being up 3-1 in the series, maybe you feel slightly different. But game two, Portland, it got out of hand for them. Game four, they ran away from it in the second half and ultimately won by double digits, leading by 19. I just think it's a confident group, and OKC hasn't shown enough consistency.
Last time they won three in a row or more, the end of the year. They won five in a row to end the season. I'm surprised he forgot about that, but the playoffs can do that to you. It's a long, long series. All right, game five tonight. How do you think it's going to go? 55305. There was something that he mentioned that made me think of Portland, and it came from Billy Donovan. And I'll tell you what I'm talking about next on The Fan. I was asking Dirt during the break, where's the sphincter if Oklahoma City does just play their best game tonight and it goes back to OKC for game six? But before we talk about that, Eric Horn made me... He made me think of something with Portland. He was talking about Billy Donovan and how the organization doesn't always overreact the way fans do, media does. And maybe they fire Billy Donovan, maybe they don't. He picks him as the likely scapegoat, though, if they are eliminated tonight. Sure. And they lose in five and three straight years out in round one, including, I believe, being swept last year by Utah.
They weren't swept, were they? I think they won one game, because I think we had a game of Playoff P where he went off and said, Playoff P's here.
Okay. Well,
I'll go look it up.
You might be right, yeah. But they didn't beat Utah.
No, they've been terrible since KD left.
What I thought about, though, was Portland is obviously in the driver's seat right now in this series, and they might get to round two. Isn't it interesting to think, had it not gone this way, there's a real chance this could be it for Terry Stotts in this round?
Yeah, if you were down 3-1 right now in this series, we would be having that conversation.
Now, before people text in, "Will Sprague, they didn't have Nurkic, that would have been the out." I don't know, man. I think Dame would hopefully have stepped up and had something to say about, "Hey, I don't want a new coach. That's not how you continue to build continuity and stability within an organization." I mean, look at Phoenix, for God's sakes.
Yeah, what the hell are they doing?
They just fired their coach they hired less than a year ago. And that comes on the heels of firing the previous coach less than a year after they hired him. You don't want that kind of shakeup a lot. And I'm not saying Neil would have, but it did make me think for a second, that's right. Had they lost in five, or let's say they even got swept, is there a chance this would be Terry Stotts' last round as the head coach of the Blazers, and how weird that would be?
It'd be wild. By the way, they lost in six to Utah last year. They won game one, and then they lost three straight. They were in the same situation, down 3-1. They won game five at home, they lost game six at Utah, 96-91.
Oh, bueno.
By the way, in game five and six of that series, Westbrook went for 45 in game five, and he went for 46 in the elimination game. I want to make sure to stay in the moment, because I find it interesting all the narratives that have been created, like the one we just heard about. Well, Portland's a great example of not overreacting and panicking. This is why you stick with things. Let's get through the series first. You know, if they lose tonight, then things change for game six. Now you're a little worried. Then maybe you go to a game seven. Like, this, things can spiral out of control quickly in the playoffs. And I don't like already claiming that Portland is this playoff success story because they've won three games in the first round, as surprised as I am that they're in this position. Don't play it. I'm trying to be a realist here, right? I mean, does anybody else think that way when you hear, like...
No, I think fans do it, unfortunately. I think a lot of listeners have moved on mentally to where they're like, second round, bring it on Denver, San Antonio.
Right. I find those kind of talk, because, you know, we asked and you asked, what happens if OKC loses this series?
You know what there is, though, is to piggyback off where you're going, and I'm guilty of this, but there is a kind of... there's kind of like an over-celebration factor with this series win tonight. And I want to make it very clear, the expectations this year were not championship. Hell, they weren't even Western Conference Finals for me. It was...
Win a playoff series.
Yeah, yeah. Get out of round one. Now, they appear to be on the verge of doing that.
Absolutely.
But what comes along with that are a lot of people that... And I'm using Twitter as a snapshot here, though. Hey, this is the most amazing thing ever. And there are breaks that need to be pumped on that logic, because, yes, it's a good time. It's a good feeling. I'm excited about it. I'm not going to proclaim anything from this point on if they can eliminate OKC as a bummer disappointment, even if they lose to the Spurs in round two.
No.
And I think that's their best matchup. I'm not going to go, well, what an embarrassment. They couldn't get, like, you guys got out of round one. You accomplished the goal. But there is a little bit of a vibe, and I think this comes with not having a lot of playoff success in the last, I don't know, 20 years.
Yeah, you have two playoff series wins in 20 years.
Where getting out of a first round or getting out of any round makes you feel a little better than maybe it is.
Yeah, it feels like a big deal when I think our point is, I think collectively, let's raise the level of expectation. It would be nice to get to that. We're winning three games in a first round series. Doesn't feel like an NBA championship.
Well, I tell you right now, my level of expectation has always been that, and that's where I have a disconnect with a lot of fans that go, "You guys hate him because Isaac got fired." It's such a lazy ass narrative that people will text in from time to time. But my expectations next year will absolutely raise, and I don't know how they wouldn't be raised by almost everybody watching the team.
Right, based on what you see. I remember having Casey Holdall on the day the season started, all those months ago when L.A. was in town and LeBron was playing his first game in a Laker uniform, and we asked him, how do you mark a successful season? And he was the one that said it, and we all agreed in unison. Win a playoff series. With what you've gone through the last couple of years, especially last season against New Orleans, you win a playoff series, I think most people will feel it as a success. The one thing I know about tonight... I do expect Portland to win tonight. I don't know how you trust Oklahoma City at this point in the series.
They can't shoot, man.
They can't shoot. But watching Russell Westbrook's going to be fun, because of in his last three elimination games that he's played in. So basically the 3 years since Kevin Durant left, they've all been first round games because they haven't won a series since then. You want to take a guess at how many field goal attempts he has averaged the last 3 years in elimination games?
30, 30,
28.
38.
Wow.
He is. So 3 years ago, he was 18 of 43 for 46 points. 2 years ago, he went 17 of 39 for 45 points. And last year, as I mentioned in that game, he was 15 of 34 for 47 points. He has averaged 38 field goal attempts a game
in
the elimination.
Fire away.
Let him shoot.
Yeah, as long as they're not all right at point blank range.
Right, right. The threes, by the way, in two of those three times, the first year he took 19 threes. Last year in that Utah loss, he took 18 3-pointers.
Bombs away.
18 of his 34 shots were threes.
Hey, Russ, what do shooters do?
Keep shooting.
They keep shooting. Shooters shoot.
Hey, by the way, he actually answered two questions from Barry Trammell.
What?
Sort of.
They were terrible answers, but again, he gives nobody good answers. But he answered them. He didn't next
like
question
like legitimately
him.
An answer.
Yeah, he didn't.
No, they weren't legitimate answers.
Give me five legitimate answers he gives you in a press conference.
I mean, it's
you
not
won't
much.
Find more than one.
Yeah.
He gives you usually 2-3-word answers.
Are you going to ask him any questions tonight? Can we get Brandon Sprague, 1080 The Fan, hot question? Hey, Russ, why you suck?
I don't know, because I'm going to be at an in-between of I'm going to enjoy the atmosphere. It's going to be a lot of fun to see the post-game stuff. But I also want to get home because last time I got home, I didn't get to bed till 2:30 in the morning.
Can you ask him at the podium tonight what he's going to do with all the brick houses he built in Portland?
Would I be banned? Probably. I probably would be, right?
I don't know about banned.
Yeah, I would get...
They might ban me in the next round. Yeah.
I'd be getting an email in my inbox in the next morning.
Hey, real estate's looking good in Portland right now, Russ. You built a couple of brick houses while you're here. How's it feel?
Was Sprague drinking before the game?
Hey, Ross.
No, but game two, I had like three different invites. Hey, dude, I'm at the game. Let's get a beer.
Go get a beer.
I can't.
Yeah, go drink a beer. It's a celebration night.
I'll get an email for that one.
Yeah. Let it fly, big man.
Somebody wants to know, are you guys just not satisfied with a win? Because before this series started, it was win a playoff series. Now they're about to win a playoff series, and you guys have already started the next narrative of, well, try winning more than two playoff series in 20. If this is what I'm talking about. Like, how do you listen to what we just said, and that's your takeaway?
Yeah, no, I'm
this
not saying that.
This is a big deal. It matters. Right. And you have beaten the expectations of what your year are. That is amazing, especially without your second best player.
Right.
Because I'm not going to be one that jumps off the train. CJ's having a great series. Suddenly that knocks Nurkic down. This is an amazing feat. All we brought up was, let's see what happens when you get to round two. I'm jacked to find out. I hope that they play the Spurs between Denver and San Antonio. Could be wrong on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also just threw out, this will revamp it. And if you don't think it does, I don't know what to tell you. Because I think a lot of people are, it's going to revamp. And that is the thing that happens when you have success.
Yes.
Your expectations revamp. That doesn't have to be a bad thing. It's only a bad thing if you don't live up to the expectations by media, fans, whoever. Okay, we got a lot more to get to with the last half hour of hour number two, but NFL True or False, it is a Tuesday, it's 1:30, NFL True or False is next.
Hey, we'll get to some NFL stuff coming up top of the hour. Raiders are out sharing rumors about their number four pick. I can't wait to see what they do. OBJ is feuding with his former team.
What do you think a relationship is like with Mike Mayock and John Gruden? You think they trust anything?
And no, I don't think they do. In 10 minutes, you might see Brandon Sprague the most angriest he's ever been on this show. Because one scout has a criticism of an NFL draft available player. It's an interesting one. He's got a red flag.
His red flag is dumb.
Do we agree with the red flag? We'll get to that coming up at crunch time. Slightly after 1:30, though, let's get to NFL True or False. By the way, I went back and looked at the Cleveland-Pittsburgh one.
What did it say?
And it did not say scheduled. It said who will play in more primetime games in 2019.
Oh, there we go. We got to wait
so
for the flex.
The door is open.
Right now, Pittsburgh's winning.
Pittsburgh's up, what, 6-5?
5-4.
5-4. Okay.
All right. Well, we'll see how much flexing there will be during the season. All right. A draft-themed edition today. According to the latest combined mock drafts of Mel Kiper Jr. and Todd McShay, ESPN projecting 13 players from the SEC will be taken in the first round of the NFL draft on Thursday more than everybody else. The other conferences. True or false? A conference other than the SEC will have the most players from its schools selected in round one of this year's NFL draft.
I'll go false here, Bob.
Round one. Yeah, I'm going to go false on this, too.
Big Ten's got a chance.
Yeah, the Big Ten, I think, was next with like 9 or 10.
Uh-huh.
Big 12 had 7 or 8, most of them from Oklahoma.
I don't trust it enough, though. I go false.
Yeah, false. As much as you'd like to see more parity, it's still dominated by the SEC.
They get the NFL boys.
Yeah, they
do. Nothing we can do about that.
At the other end of the spectrum, the Pac-12 currently just one or two players being considered for the first round of the draft.
Catch the fever.
True or false, no more than one player from the Pac-12 will be selected in the first round on Thursday.
I think this is going to be true.
Now, who are our multiple candidates?
The offensive lineman, I think it's two offensive linemen.
Offensive lineman, Byron, Andre Dillard from Washington State.
And then the cornerback, Byron Murphy from Washington. Yeah.
I've seen him going to Seattle in a couple of mock drafts.
Yep.
That'd be kind of fun.
Why? Because he played in Seattle?
Yeah, Seattle.
See, if I'm him, I want out.
You want to move to a new city?
Yeah. I want to see the world a little bit.
God, this is depressing to answer.
This is true. The Seattle Seahawks maybe draft the offensive lineman.
You know what? I'm optimistic. This is false. We'll get two in the first round.
It's false. I think you're going to get two. Dillard's for sure. I've seen most of the stuff has him going late in the first round. And then Murphy, it'll be a fit, but I think he'll go as well.
See, the mocks had Murphy going to Seattle. How does that change now that Frank Clark is officially done?
Right, has it changed their strategy? And they have two first-round picks now.
They might go wide receiver, defensive edge rusher.
Well, let's get to what the Seahawks might do next after they acquired another first-round pick today, sending pass-rushing expert Frank Clark to the Chiefs for the 29th pick this year, a second-round pick next year, and swapping third-round picks this year. True or false, the Seahawks will take two defensive players with their two first-round picks, in this year's draft.
I think this is going to be false. I think they get an offensive talent and a defensive talent. Maybe wide receiver and find a defensive line player that's going to make an impact year one, and they get him on the cheap for about 3 years.
Yeah, I'm gonna lean with where Sprague's going on that one. I wouldn't be shocked by the two defensive players because I think now you're going to want to snatch a defensive lineman up with either of those picks. The other thing that could change here is maybe there's somebody that they really, really like that's in the top 15 that they want to package, you know, 21 and 29 and move up to go get. Maybe it's closer to the top 10. So there could be some mobility there. But I think you want to have some balance if you have two first-round picks and maybe they go 21 defense, 29 offense in that way. But I don't think they'll go both defense. I'll say this is false.
Our boy Ryan Wilson from CBS, he's got him taking Farrell from Clemson, the edge rusher there.
Yeah.
And here's the this is where it could maybe get interesting. Is there a shot Marquise Brown falls to 29? Because he has him at 22. It's not like he's going to be a top 10 pick.
You never know how the board goes on draft night.
Speedy little wide receiver from Oklahoma.
I think this is true. I think they need so much on defense, not only starters, but they need to have depth, and injuries obviously have been an issue for some of their key defensive players that are still there in recent years. So I think when push comes to shove, like you said, unless somebody just tumbles that they had in the top 15 that they can't say no to.
Hollywood Brown would be fun to watch in that offense.
DK Metcalf? Does he fall?
All right. Finally, there were 7 draft day trades involving first round picks in 2018.
There were 7?
Yes.
Wow.
True or false, there will be more than 7 trades involving first round picks on Thursday.
This has to be false, right? That's so many trades.
It has to be
it
false.
It has to be false. If you don't trade number 1 in the Cardinals, which it doesn't look like they're going to do, they're going to take Kyler Murray, right? I think we're all in agreement on that.
The Raiders have 3 picks. The Packers have 2 picks. The Seahawks have 2
picks. Packers need a lot of help, though, so
The Giants have 2 picks.
So that's 4.
Well,
who do you see in the top 5 making a trade?
Well, who trades out?
Right, is anybody going to trade out?
And who could trade out at the end?
I mean, like, what late team in the first round
doesn't want in? New England's notorious for trading out.
Yeah, it could be. To get all the way to 7, though, like, I get there's a lot of teams with multiple picks, but
I'll say false. The most it does is tie 7.
Yeah, I'll say false, too.
I think this is true. I think it's going to be wild on Thursday. I think there's going to be wheeling and dealing. I think you could see picks get dealt multiple times. I think it's going to be a wild, wild night. And we'll be out at Kingpin's in Beaverton, taking it all in.
Yeah, you will be.
I will be. The
I
station
will, not be.
Will be. Isaac and Souk will be.
Yes.
Be having a good time.
Yeah, go hang out. Did we pick all of our GMs? Have they all been selected?
Yes. So we had to do some phone calls here to let the Chiefs guy know he's now the Seahawks guy. But, you know.
What if he hated the right. Seahawks and only wanted to be a Chiefs guy?
Yeah, that's tough. Poor Chiefs guy. Diehard Chiefs fan. Now he's got to pick for the Seahawks. I don't want to do that.
I don't want to pick for this team.
Where does this year's draft rank for people? Like, is the excitement level really high? I feel like last year there was a buzz because of all the quarterbacks in the top 10.
Well, there's the Murray buzz. Is he going number one?
If everybody feels, I mean, that's going to happen,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, the deepest positions are like edge rushers, interior offensive, defensive linemen.
Glenn Williams do it for you?
I think it's always, it always depends on how important it is a draft for your team, in my opinion.
Sure.
So.
And where your team's selecting. And
Yeah, it can vary.
Okay.
But I'm also like, I'm one of those guys that I watch the draft live and then the next year I'll miss the first 15 picks and catch up.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to watch it live.
No,
yeah.
I don't have to watch it live.
It'll actually be broken on Twitter before the draft even takes place. So you can just follow along on Twitter and know before everybody else does.
Yeah, I don't need the breakdowns of every player.
Anyone hear Mel Kiper?
No.
Are you jacked up for the draft? 55305. By the way, tomorrow, speaking of getting jacked up for the draft, we have our annual Dirt and Sprague mock draft.
We do.
12:30. It's going to go down. We're doing it.
12:30 and 12:45.
Yeah, it's going to go long because we've got 10 different cities to go to. We're doing it live.
We'll do it live.
Mm-hmm. 12:30. We'll see if we can execute this.
12:30, we'll go with the first five picks. We're going to have them all on the line.
Boom, boom, boom.
And then the next five on the next segment and give you the mock top 10 picks in everybody's minds. We're going to change it this year. First of all, we're doing all of them live. We haven't always done that. And second, we're going to eliminate the players. So in years past, I've always just been interested, who would they take with this pick? And never told them that, oh, yeah, this player.
So-and-so has already been selected.
We'll change that this year. We'll write all the names as we go, and they'll have to take whoever is available.
So that'll be tomorrow. It's always a fun thing to do leading into the NFL draft, which is 2 days away. We'll get back into the NFL with some stuff on the Raiders and Giants and Browns coming up top of the hour. Of course, game five tonight we still need to get to, but there is an NFL scout out there labeling a kid worrisome at the next level. Why? Well, we'll tell you. Crunch time next on The Fam.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that, you know, we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments. Was not at the Glorious House of Gaines.
I ain't having that. You got me? I ain't having that.
Sorry, Mario. I'll be there tomorrow. Raiders, what are they going to do with the fourth pick? Their answers continue to amuse me. We'll get to that coming up.
Put the ball right there in the turkey hole.
At the top of the hour. Also, Odell Beckham is feuding with his old team. And does anybody really care if players don't show up to voluntary minicamp? Because that's a thing every year.
Tom Coughlin does.
Well, don't get me started on Tom Coughlin.
Le'Veon Bell, Odell, not committed.
Not committed. Let's get to this, though. I think the enjoyable part about the NFL draft process is when you get the random criticisms from scouts that don't really know a guy. They just take a shot in the dark thinking they know a guy. Some of the classics that I will always remember are Josh Rosen and what he went through last year because he had a hot tub in his dorm room. Big character flaw. I don't know if I'd want him as my franchise guy. Well, it turns out he's a pretty good dude, and he's handled a really tough situation with nothing but class. Of course, Marcus Mariota, who had no red flags, which, I mean, come on, that's a red flag.
Oh, was that scout wrong?
How does a guy have no red flags? There's got to be a red flag there.
I feel like if he had red flags, he'd stay more healthy.
I saw this. So this came, now this is a couple of years ago, so this didn't come out this year. Arif Hassan, he covers the NFL for The Athletic, and he put together a piece basically saying, remember that when you're reading anonymous scouts on guys, take it with a grain of salt.
Okay.
And he brings up Kaleki Osemele, who has played in the NFL. Let's see how many years he's been in the league. One, two, three. He's been in the league since 2012, okay? And essentially every year that he has been in the league, he has started every game he's played in Baltimore and Oakland. He's been a successful offensive lineman. Good, solid career. And so this guy went back and found the scouting report on him out of Iowa State. He measured at 6'5 and a half, 330 pounds. Big time dude. Big prospect, right? Everybody's excited about this guy. Except for one scout who had this to say. Quote, he's not a bad kid at all. I just don't know if football is that important to him. He was raised by women, which bothers me.
Yeah.
I mean, how tough can he be? It's not his fault. It's just the reality. There was an anonymous NFL scout who said about this guy who has now had, what, a six-year NFL career starting basically every game he's played when he's been healthy with two different organizations. I don't know if I'd want him. He's raised by women. It kind of bothers me. He's got to be soft if he's raised by women.
Well, if he was raised by a man, he wouldn't be missing games, would he?
That's right. He wouldn't be injury prone over a couple of years of his career.
I'm wondering if this scout still has a job because it's a terrible assessment and breakdown of somebody.
How did I just see this? Like, this was like 6 years ago. How are we just seeing this evaluation?
Well, it was
out?
Just put on SB Nation, right?
Yeah, Bill Connolly was the one. Bill Connolly found it and tweeted it out again, which is how I saw it. But the guy put it in his article for The Athletic.
So do you go down the list of athletes who were just raised by single women that have had success, or does that scout not care about those people?
No, I don't think he cares.
Okay.
I think he just thinks he's mentally weak because he didn't have a dad.
I think this might go on as one of the dumber reasons to not like a player.
Has to be, right?
Now, if you there is something to the he might not care about football thing. I get that. Because a lot of athletes, and you hear this all the time from former, not everybody playing cares about that sport. It's just that's what they do, and they can make a lot of money doing it.
Right.
Okay. Stop there. Don't give me the he's raised by a woman and that's a problem and how soft he is or how tough he is, and really? That's where you lose me. That's where I think you should lose every normal thinking human being because those are the dumbest things I've ever heard.
I love like the random scares the teams get about drafting guys. It's always funny to me. Rosen is clearly the most recent example of that last year. I never bought into the character flaws. And so far, there haven't been any at the National Football League level. Remember the one a couple of years ago was Laramie Tunzel? Remember him where he had the video?
Like the weed and the gas mask.
And like his stepdad, what was it? Like some family member tweeted it out to try and screw him because he was mad at they're in a fight or something. And he goes pummeling down draft boards. He was supposed to be like a top 5 or 6 pick. Nobody takes him. Everybody's scared. Miami ends up taking him. He's been in the league for 3 years, and he's started every game that he's played, 14, 15, and 15 each of the last 3 years. He's been a solid offensive lineman.
Has he been a Pro Bowler, though?
I don't know the answer to that. But he's been good, right? Like, come on. Like some of these fears just crack me up with red flags. Now, it doesn't mean that every time a guy has character flaws, like some of them are real. Like Reuben Foster is a good example of that.
Yes.
A guy who at Alabama went through some stuff. He was kicked out of the combine. He had to run in with a doctor at the combine because of his shoulder. He's been dealing with off the field things his entire career. No matter how many of them are true, he's constantly in the news in negative highlights. I would say something like that though is an actual red flag that you should be concerned by as opposed to, you know, being raised by a mom.
How much of these kind of, these write-ups from scouts, do you think is just the industry itself and being caught up and it being so mundane versus
right.
just being a moron?
It's a combination of both.
I think it's not so much the industry. I think it really is just people that somehow got a scouting job, which by the way, I don't know. I've talked to a couple different people and you'll get people who are local scouts. It's not like they're really that important at all to their organization. They send in some notes every once in a while. You get others. Obviously you move up the charts of people who respect, but there's a lot of scouts out there that are scouts for 2 years, 1 year, and then they're fired, never a scout again. There's a reason for that, right? Like if they wanted to be a scout and they were really good and they could move up the ranks to be a GM or a coach or something, they would. And a lot of them don't. So I think this is more just, he's one of those scouts that may not be a scout anymore. Because that's a stupid breakdown of somebody.
Right, that bad.
I don't think it's the industry. I think it's the people.
Somebody said, I guarantee that scout still has a job. If we've learned anything about the NFL, it's a good old boys network. Yeah, he's probably still hanging around a little bit. Now, I haven't seen a ton. Have we seen any big red flags about guys this year? It feels like that hasn't necessarily been a talking point where every year it is.
Well, Kyler Murray's short.
Other than that, I'm talking more character issues, though, because it feels like every year that comes out. Like, do you trust a guy's motor? Is he gonna? Even Bosa has gone past this
And we didn't talk about this, but Bosa's thing is his political beliefs.
Yeah, he supported Donald Trump on Twitter, and now he's deleted all of his tweets. He also sent out negative tweets about Colin Kaepernick, and he realizes he might be going to play in San Francisco, so he deleted all those tweets too.
Which is interesting, because do you think 49er fan hates him because of his Trump or Kaepernick stuff? I don't think they care if he's getting sacks.
NFL fans don't care about anything other than, are you a good player?
And that's what my point
Frank Clark is a great example of that. Like, if you're not willing to draw the line at what that guy did when he was at Michigan and you're supporting him because he's a good defensive lineman, if Bosa comes out and dominates next year, you can wear a MAGA hat to every practice you want and nobody's going to care.
Well, I mean, he picked up his girlfriend in a hotel room, choked her out, threw her on a couch. Her brother thought he was going to murder her.
Right.
Tyreek Hill punched his pregnant girlfriend. Like, no fan. We all act like we have this moral high ground, and then when the guy has a sack or a touchdown, we're going nuts.
We forget about it.
We'd completely forget about it. Bosa, to me, and you even said it there in the way you worded it, dude, he still supports Trump. Like, that's who he is. That's his beliefs. That's fine. I don't know why he cares so much about that. You know, if you put it out there on Twitter that you're all for Donald Trump, don't suddenly delete it because you're going to a city where Colin Kaepernick played.
Yeah.
Just be who you are. Fans will not care once you start getting sacks.
Yeah. The only thing I ever say to people about Twitter, or would say if I could to athletes, is like, go scrub things, because now you have guys that are coming into their professional careers who have been on social media their entire life.
Yeah. How many guys are going to have embarrassing tweets from when they were 14?
Like, that's always a draft night thing. Like, somebody will probably get drafted and they'll find a tweet from 2009. Like, oh, look at what this guy said.
Remember Zach Collins?
Yeah. Yeah, he had some of that.
He had creepy ones. He was a kid who was, like, twerking.
Right. He had some weird ones.
Yeah.
DiVincenzo, I think, had some weird ones that he had to go scrub.
Remember Mitchell, I Love Boobies, Trubisky?
He did. He had those.
Yeah, those guys, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, that would be my only advice. It's like, if you were tweeting dumb stuff that any 15 or 16-year-old, or not any, but a lot of 15 or 16-year-olds would do, like, go scrub that. But if it's your political beliefs and something that you've tweeted in the last year and you believe... Yeah, I don't think, like, maybe there's a segment of social media people who will always attack you for it, but people will love you if you play well. It doesn't matter what you do.
What would the reaction be if the Blazers won tonight and Dame announced that he's supporting Donald Trump?
If they win, I don't think anybody...
You don't think Portland?
Well, sure, maybe people are upset by it, but he just won a damn playoff series.
I would enjoy how uncomfortable he made a lot of fans.
Over the loudspeaker at the Moda Center.
Yeah, you know, actually, I support him on this. Oh, no, Dave. You get so many conflicted, super liberal Blazer fans, they wouldn't know what to do.
Right. I did find the Kaepernick one just cracked me up. Like, him taking shots at Kaepernick and then realizing that Niner fans actually they support him, and he's probably going to be the number two, two or three overall pick?
Number
two overall pick in the draft and go to San Francisco. That's awkward.
I just thought, dude, just be who you're going to be.
Yeah, just be you, man.
NFL fans have shown we do not care.
Yeah, Tyreek Hill's a great example of that, too, what he did in college. And nobody in Kansas City had a problem supporting
him. Cleveland, if Kareem Hunt ends up...
right.
You know what I mean? Like, and not Kareem Hunt did anything insane there, but it doesn't matter who you are or what you do. Fans will find a way to overlook it.
So just a reminder, some of these red flags that come out around draft time are funny. There was a guy that 6 years ago at NFL Scout said, I don't know, he's not tough because he was raised by women. He didn't have a dad. I can't trust this guy at the next level. It didn't quite pan out.
You're probably tougher than I am.
You know, it explains it now. I don't have a tough co-host. You know, you're raised by a mom, Sprague. You got to toughen up, man.
Let's arm wrestle right now.
Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments. We'll stick in the NFL a little bit to start the final hour. Does anybody care if guys show up to voluntary workouts or not? Odell Beckham is continuing to feud with his old team, and I really loved his response to what his former GM had to say. We'll get to that as well. And the Raiders continue to crack me up about what they're going to do in the NFL draft. And then, of course, we got to get back into Game 5. What's going to happen tonight? Are we celebrating in the Moda Center, or is this thing headed for a Game 6? We'll break it down and preview it as Portland tries to close out the Thunder tonight at home in Game 5. Load of final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.